This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
The start of the Lindsay Clancy trial began with Prosecutor Shannon Buckingham opening with some very key words, telling the jury it was not a debate about how the medical system treats women. It's actually a debate about how incompetent the medical system is to anyone and everyone who's unfortunate enough to have to enter through its doors. And I think the testimony that we've seen from some medical professionals in the last handful of days really solidifies that fact. And this is not an indictment on these doctors, on Dr. Tufts or anyone who was on the stand. I want to be clear on that. I view a lot of these folks as operating within the confines of a system and within the restrictions that that system implements on the people working within it. What I have a problem with watching specifically Tufts and some of the others as well, and I want to get into it, is the level of acceptance of mediocrity. It feels like there's a level, and for years we've been saying this phrase, just do your best. And the thing is, a lot of people's bests aren't that great. You know, the best is up here. When we're just doing their best, they're down here. And when that becomes the best for everybody, well, the bar is quite low. And then if you have a system that basically doesn't support you in ways it needs to, doesn't communicate with the other, and you know, and you see how broken these systems are, and you see the inadequacies and the way it fails the patients, the ways that it does, but your response is just, well, there's not a drop down for that. And nothing more than that's just how it is. Some things will never change. That's just the way it is. I'm telling you awe, but don't you believe it, in the words of Bruce Hornsby. Things need to change. That's what I was shocked by, the level of complacency with the inadequacies of the system. That's what I'm going to say. Robin Dreek, retired FBI Special Agent, Chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, is with us as always. Good morning, Robin. I know you've been watching this even more intently than I've been able to.
Because you do so much content.
I mean, I've been trying to absorb as much as I can. Yeah. That's been my take on what I've seen. What's been yours?
I got to highlight my... First of all, I got to apologize. Yesterday, I misspoke a bit on Patrick's current wife. I said during our episode that she was a lawyer. I had lawyer on my mind. She's actually a medical doctor.
Yeah.
So I want to make sure I correct that. And it's on YouTube. So thank you all for correcting me on that one. I apologize for that mistake. But on this, I am so with you. I also have my own personal confirmation biases. As you all know, my daughter is also a labor and delivery nurse, so I hear a lot about the nursing industry. And plus, we have our own team here with nurses and families and whatnot. I saw such a striking difference between Tufts and everyone else. And I'm completely with you, Tony. I know a lot of people have been going at Dr. Tufts online because of her really... lackluster answers, incomplete answers, her lack of depth of field, her lack of experience, all these things. But to your point, let's focus on the system that set her up to completely fail. And this is even in my own town, there's a hospital system here that's under a lot of fire because of exactly this. When you start placing systems and profit above the patient, you can say all the nice words you want, but the system starts falling apart. And just as a quick comparison between the two, because here's what really struck me between the last couple of days and the majestic Kevin Reddington's cross-examination of everyone. So Tufts was able to spend, and she said, now granted, a psychiatrist is not a therapist as a primary. Mm-hmm. She's a medical doctor first and foremost.
Psychiatrists are the ones that can prescribe.
Yes.
And that's I think a lot of people don't understand that. It's not the same as a therapist or a psychiatrist can prescribe the medications. A therapist is different than that.
But so can a psychiatric nurse practitioner can also prescribe. So it's kind of like nurse practitioners, but on the psychiatric side, because we got a few of these people in here. And so when you heard her, when you looked at her and you heard the cross of her, she did not have depth of field. She had been a fully licensed on her own outside of her her internship.
Residency.
Residency.
Yep.
For 1 month before she saw Lindsay.
She was green. Yeah.
Very green. And described by the organization as an expert in the field of this, of women's health, of postpartum depression. And granted, she said during the residency, she saw like 40 or 50 cases of this, but had seen none as fully licensed. Without support, she did everything as she testified solo. There was no, you know, if you're dealing with a first patient that is like this, you would think that there would be teachers, mentors, guides, someone to bounce things off of. And she kept deferring back to, well, the systems drop-down menu, didn't ask for this. She's describing the intake process. She's describing about 13 minutes. You can hear the insurance companies saying, you can only do this, you can only do this, you can only do this. And that's her. Now let's compare it to, again, we're going on these first impressions, Julie Paul. Mm-hmm. Julie Paul was the labor and delivery expert who then became a midwife. And I also believe, again, if I get it wrong, I apologize. I think she's also a psychiatric nurse as well. Oh my gosh. So her intake, 90 minutes, 30 minutes with the nurse first to get all the vitals and everything, then 1 hour with Julie herself. And you know how she found her? From what I heard, I recognize the last name is Clancy. I think Lindsay's mother had a friend that put her in contact.
Mother-in-law.
And then she calls her on the phone on the weekend. Mm-hmm. The nurse, you know, Paul called Lindsay on the weekend, asked if she had permission. She called her. And so Lindsay then had her own personal cell phone. She was constantly checking in. You saw depth of field. You saw compassion. You saw the years and years of reps of doing these things. And when she's talking about the medications, when she's talking about the therapy, when she's talking about her discussions, she's going back and forth. I mean, she was able to field questions. She was able to answer things. And you could just sense, because the congruency between, she never had a deer in the headlights. Mm-hmm. She never had to justify anything. She never had to deflect and say it was a system that set up that this way, or there's no drop down menu here, or I was high, or so it was just a vast difference we saw between the nurses, the nurse practitioners, even the psychiatric nurse practitioners, and the psychiatrist with very little to no experience in anything in life. And you saw the systems, is what I'm saying. You saw the systems in vast contrast, no congruency, no collaboration, and the result was catastrophic.
I'm just looking into the future, and I'm guessing there will be a 40-some-year-old, 50-some-year-old version of Dr. Tufts that will look back on this and just cringe, if she's not already, going, oh my God, my response was a drop-down menu. Like, that's my reasoning. That's just what guy, it's like, you're speaking these things out loud. they're the filter or the idea, like, maybe this isn't the adequate answer. Maybe there are some things here that you could point to and go, here, and phrase it a certain way of, here's the restrictions I'm working within. Maybe there's not a lot of room for conjecture, because there really isn't a lot of times on the stand. So I got to play with that too, and have some understanding and grace there. But I don't think anyone would have shut her up if she would have answered in a way of, here's how the restrictions are to answer your question. But again, she's on the line too civilly. So anything she says can and will be used against her there too. So she's not necessarily in a situation where she's going to be inspired to throw her office under the bus, or the infrastructure to which she operates under the bus that license her. There's a lot of motivating factors for the answers that she gave, but other than just being really young and really green, I didn't look at her as like she's some nefarious person. She's just
she's best not, of what she had, and she didn't have anything.
She's starting out, and it's like, if I was assigned her, I'd be like, I need a new one. Like, I need somebody with some reps in this. I mean, it's just, but everybody's got to start somewhere,
and,
I guess.
And there's a business aspect of this that I understand. Again, I have a couple good friends of mine that are actually medical doctors.
Yeah.
One is an orthopedic surgeon. And he's got multiple doctors in his practice. And what is striking when I became friends with him and talk to him and watch him do what he does, he has depth of field of his business. He's not a doctor that is just an employee. It's since it's his name that is being used for profit, he feels very accountable to how he's being represented. And so Dr. Tufts couldn't even respond to not knowing what's said about her on the website. At least she said she didn't. So in other words, she was just merely in her, as she was portraying it, I'm a pawn in the system of my organization.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, that organization is really saying who they are because of you, your title and position. We're getting clients in because of you. So you better have some damn well vesting in what we're saying about you. In other words, she... And this is where I think the system also fails, official and unofficial. Where was the teacher, mentors, and guides saying, hey, look, and listen, you're a brand new psychiatrist in our practice that we're going to use your name, we're going to put you on the Facebook page, we're going to put you out there on the website, and we're going to market our business based on you. I mean, even with a book coming out, I got another thing coming out in a couple of days that we'll announce. Yeah. I have a marketing team. You have publicists. You have people that work with you that say, are you comfortable with this? Are you comfortable with this?
Yeah.
She deflected the entire thing as if she's completely oblivious about anything except her drop-down menu. She had such a narrow scope, you know. And so where the system, the entire system is completely ludicrous. It's like she's selling hot dogs, man. I mean, and she set up in a hot dog stand and so just sell these hot dogs
really,
at this price.
You're exactly right. I mean, it's what it felt like. It felt like we weren't talking about someone's mental health. It felt like it was, well, the drop-down menu says I can't add mustard to the order.
Yeah.
Well, the bottle's right there. Why didn't you pour some on? But it's not on the drop-down
menu.
Menu.
It's not on the menu.
It's not on the drop-down. I can't do it. It's a level of accepted bureaucracy and accepted blocks, accepted roadblocks that are purely... purely conscious. They're not really there. They're inserted there by suggestion, and you're operating as if it's a true brick wall and that you have no autonomy. But that's how a lot of these systems want you to work. That's why there's so much of this, because people like that thrive in these environments, because these sort of systems only want people like this. And if you're different, if you're unique, well, those are the ones that have the independent private practices that don't take a lot of insurance, because a lot of insurance doesn't want to deal with that and actual help. They want to deal with the cattle calls, move them through. And I mean, I feel like she's young. She's in the beginnings of her career.
Was.
In a system. Was. Yeah. And I'm not trying to make excuses for the woman, but holy shit. Either it's time for a career change and this just is not the world for you. Mm-hmm. Or you need to seriously question, the scope of your dedication to this practice, because I don't believe your heart's in it. If you're okay with this level of care that you're giving, because it's not adequate to what is needed. When you're talking about mental health, you're not selling hot dogs. The drop down's not for mustard, and I think that's a key thing.
I agree. You know, and I'm sorry to pile on, but one more note on this thing too is one of the things that medical doctors are is they're scientists as well. They do a lot of research. It is a lot of challenging doctrine. It's a lot of understanding algorithms, process, you know, and there are established protocols that are put in place because of research and experimentation and cause and effect, theories, hypotheses, all these things. They use the scientific method with what they do based on established protocols, which requires a lot of curiosity and challenging things that don't make sense. They ask questions, and like you just said. And so the lack of questioning of systems, which is, in my estimation, from what I understand from the doctors I know, is what you do as a doctor. If something's not working effectively, you question the system, because that's what scientists do. You're trying to disprove yourself all the time, because if it's not working, you question and interrogate that system. And It did not happen here whatsoever.
Well, ever. When the system is designed to keep people moving through, to keep getting billable hours and to keep getting billable things to send to the insurance company, that's you lose some of that. And I'm not insinuating that they were trying to like screw her over. Or it's such a broken ecosystem, and this is 1,000% an indictment on it. This is the world needs to see this. If people are like, oh, this is some one off. No, this is how the medical system works pretty much all the time. This is a snapshot on a Tuesday. And unfortunately, Lindsay Clancy was in such a horrific state mentally that a Tuesday ended up costing the lives of her three children. I want to go to some of the comments that I've seen on this online and just kind of throw them out there. No right or wrong, all conjecture. And if you got thoughts on it, be sure to drop them in the comment section. Here's one of them. It says, hold on, the doctor who ran her hospital stay gets asked how many women with postpartum psychosis she's ever treated, and the answer is none, not one in a whole career. And she's the one who cleared Lindsay to go home. Does that single answer decide the case? Or am I letting it do too much work? Well, she hadn't been in the field all that long, so long career, not really there. And postpartum psychosis, you can theoretically and very likely, your odds are actually there of spending a whole career and never once treating someone with postpartum psychosis because it is that rare. Now, postpartum depression is a different thing. That's something you would normally see. But even her response to that was, maybe a couple. There was no confidence to that answer, too. I was kind of like, you don't even know if you've seen that, do you? The odds are there might be. But it's just, yeah. So, I mean, what's your thoughts there? I mean, we're entrusting people to make judgment calls on psychiatric situations when... Again, I can understand maybe never seeing it, but it feels like there wasn't even an understanding of it.
Yeah, I saw this in my own career, and I think many people see it in their career too, and it's hard to see when you're in your 20s or early 30s, and that is she didn't know what she didn't know. She thought she knew everything. All you heard her say was all the experience she had as an intern, and it just, that's not real world. When, again, I know it's kind of apples and oranges, but it's the kind of same thing. In my field of work, when I first had assigned my squad in New York City, you were assigned to the lowest cases possible because you don't have the reps yet to actually go against a known intelligence officer working on behalf of a foreign government. That went to the big guys. That went to the guys with 20, 25 years experience. And even though I remember saying to myself, I got this, I can do this, what they would do is, and the cases... In all cases, in successful organizations, is like, all right, you got this, you got the energy, and you got the husband. All right, I'll tell you what you can do. You can be the co-case on this. Or I'll tell you what, we'll put you out lead. But we're going to sign you, you're a Jedi Master, to ride bumper cars for you. So they'll be your guardrails as you're moving down the course together. She was completely solo, at least from her description, solo on, granted, and this is what I mean. This was a big case, but she didn't recognize it as a big case. This was a big, Lindsay was in a lot of crisis and she was being as transparent as possible. But, and again, I'm not an expert, so I don't know what she should have saw or didn't saw. All I know is that Dr. Tufts did not see it. Yeah. Could someone more experienced, like the nurse practitioner, all of them saw more there. They all were so much more vested personally in her. And it's not, and I know it takes bandwidth. I know it breaks boundaries of people's personal professional life. Okay, it happens sometimes. I mean, hell, I mean, when you're a I remember in the Marine Corps once, I remember a senior officer told us once, she goes, you know, you have jobs and you have professions. Job is something you do 9 to 5 and you leave it and you go home at the end of the day, you never think of it again. A profession is something you live every minute, every day, and you think about it 24/7. Welcome to our world, right? As I'm thinking about Tony in my mind on this all the time.
Yeah.
You know, but you live it. And you could feel the nurses in her life living it, doing the best they could, maintaining boundaries. And the doctor was a job. I mean, the psychiatrist, it was a job for her. And she was checking off the boxes, and it was profound difference there. I don't know what the right answer on that one is. I'm just telling you, you could see it, you could sense it, and as we saw, the results are catastrophic.
Here's another one, and I got some thoughts on it too. Her psychiatrist saw her on January 23rd, the day before, and testified she thought Lindsay was just depressed. So either that doctor missed something enormous or there was nothing to miss. I don't know which one scares me more. Which one is it? And this is, I think, the crux of this whole case. In terms of the public's reaction to it, why people are going after Patrick and saying they think he did it, why no one can wrap their mind around this idea that we can't see a psychotic person or someone in active psychosis. I got to say that correctly. Someone in active psychosis. And no, you can't always. And that is, it's simple. It's so many things. We always talk about this. So many things are just... It's a simple answer. You can't always see that. They're going to look normal. They can figure out directions. They can tell you to pick up food. They can tell you to pick up Miralax. They can actively tell a doctor that they're just depressed, that they're not thinking of horrible things. And they may have various motivations to do that, whether they're embarrassed, shameful, or literally not feeling that way at all at that moment in time. So they're not going to express that. But then 30 minutes later, they might feel that way. But they're not considering that that is something they should be answering yes to in that moment. Not because they want to hide it, but because that's what's going on when you're in a state of psychosis. Nothing is adding up. Nothing is making sense. But it's all making sense to you. The discombobulation of everything makes total sense to you the way you're seeing it. But somebody on the outside looking in is not going to see that. And they're only as good as what you're able to share with them. But a person in active psychosis is not in a state to share accurately.
Yeah.
And that's all it is. They're not in a place to share accurately. So you're not going to get accurate information. And the best decisions that can be made for that person might not necessarily be made because they don't have all the information. And you know, are there ways to dig deeper and try to get to it? Yeah, sure. But you know, there's got to be grace there too for a provider. You only can dig so much and dig so far. If someone's not going to reveal what might be behind their mask, or even realize they're wearing a mask, I feel like there's a lot of indictment going on of us as a society and our fear that this is around us, that people are capable of this. And because of that fear, we don't want to accept it. So we're trying to find 50 other things of what to blame other than the simplicity of, you don't know when someone's in psychosis and horrible things can happen. And they do.
You know, I was thinking a lot of when you're talking about, yeah, and you're right, recognizing psychosis from the outside in, I mean, it was missed by everyone, right? So it's a very hard thing. There are outwardly signs of it. Again, I'm not a licensed clinician, just from the research we see. But here's what I saw the experienced nurse practitioners, psychiatric practitioners, and the midwife picking up on that the psychiatrist didn't pick up on, at least as described during the testimony, and that is an arc of behavior. And here's the arc of behavior that Lindsay kept saying every single time. Every single time. No sleep, no sleep, no sleep, no sleep.
Yeah.
In other words, they kept trying medications. And every time Lindsay was seeing any one of these practitioners, there was no change. Nothing seemed to be working. Nothing seemed to get better. So what the nurse practitioners were saying was they kept close hands on to the best they could because they saw a flat arc. In other words, nothing was getting better, but they couldn't see if it was getting worse or not. But they know the effects of lack of sleep. They know the effects of lack of eating. They know the effects of all these medications, and they're seeing something going wrong. In other words, there's something still going on. Something's not working. Something, because I remember I've had friends I've talked to for years that, you know, I always use this as an analogy with a friend of mine that just might need some therapy or a counselor or something. If I have a good couple conversations with you, if it's not something more than that you need, you need to go see someone professional. And so that's what's happening here. They're giving her the counseling. They're giving her all these different medications to try, and nothing seems to be working. And so the fact that that wasn't working meant they kept their closer hands and closer eyes on what was going on. And psychiatrist didn't seem to, just was dismissive of the fact that there's no change. Nothing's changing. Nothing's getting better. Which if you take all the data points that lack of sleep and all these other symptoms are giving her, as you know, it was kerosene on that psychosis, which ramped it up.
Well, and here's the thing. When she goes to the doctor, one of the big things she's presenting and telling everybody is lack of sleep. Lack of sleep, lack of sleep, lack of sleep. So she's being treated then for lack of sleep. And her lack of sleep, she's anxious about not being able to sleep. So she's being treated for anxiety and depression and her lack of sleep. That's what they're looking at on the surface. And it's not getting much deeper than that. Meanwhile, she's actually suffering from postpartum psychosis and bipolar. Very different things than treating anxiety and depression and bipolar. In fact, you take medications for anxiety and depression, it's actually going to worsen the symptoms of lack of sleep and is going to aggravate that 10 times, which is exactly what happened. And as those symptoms continued to be aggravated, they kept getting worse. It just sent her on a further downward spiral as she continued to have the bipolar and the postpartum depression. She's being medicated for the wrong thing. Her anxieties on the surface level of the lack of sleep keep getting worse and keep getting exacerbated. And she keeps getting more meds for the wrong thing, which then basically turned into destruction. I mean, that is what happened here. If we're playing follow the pills, it was a misdiagnosis. It was treating the wrong thing. And then the psychology of what was going on in her mind was this fear of lack of sleep, which when you have lack of sleep can lead to 1,000 other things. So it was a shit show. And I've seen this. I've seen the lack of sleep. I've seen the fear of the lack of sleep with people on these very specific medications. I've seen the anxiety. I've seen all of this. I've watched it. And that lack of sleep end of it fucks with people to no end. And then you add the mixture of the meds and the pre-existing conditions, and holy shit, this is what can happen.
You know, what another thing that struck me, and I don't know the answer to this. I'm putting it out there as kind of a question. You know, again, questioning the system. So when you listen to both the psychiatrist and the other people giving their testimony, the nurses, I didn't understand this because I've never been on these kind of meds, but a lot of them take 4 to 6 weeks for the full effect to take effect. So if you're on a mix of a lot of different cocktails of these meds and you're seeing the reactions, the negative reactions they're having, and you're hearing her, at what point does inpatient get triggered instead of outpatient?
Getting into inpatient is we've seen that a few times of how difficult that is. You need the resources. You need to be approved to be.
I know, but you see the point, though? I mean,
you would think. I agree.
Like, what's the trigger? If this wasn't the trigger, so she couldn't. So as I understood the testimony, the side effects of the meds after 4 to 6 days was too much on a lot of these things. So they said, all right, we'll try something else since you can't, because you got to get through the side effects for the first couple days, if not a little bit longer, before the full effect in 4 to 6 weeks of the meds kick in, you know? And so that's what also caused the jumping around of them. I mean,
they weren't even doing that. I mean, I'm not a medical professional by any means, but I know enough to understand that you can't go on and off these meds like TikTok.
Yeah,
like
I know. And that's what I'm saying. It's like, the inpatient.
That's how they were being doled out. And one of the reasonings from one of the providers was, well, if the patient doesn't believe in the medications, it doesn't tend to work well. Well, that's special. But you know what? It does. None of this is about belief. It's about the chemical reaction it's having to their body and what it's doing to their brain. It's not just about their belief system in the medication. And you get somebody on this for a few days and rip them off of it. That's not good. It shouldn't be. This is not wisdom that is coming into the earth from a podcaster in his basement that talks about true crime. This is just facts of medicine and how these things work. And why the fuck, you know, this has to be reiterated from this desk and it's not coming from the doctors is beyond me. It doesn't make any sense at all, other than people are covering their ass because nobody wants to be accountable for the shit work that they actually did.
Well, that's why what we're doing is important, because, you know, if you see one, there's at least 10 to 100 more of the same thing. It just reaches a level of a psychotic break in the 1 in 1,000 chances that that happens, and then even less chances that she winds up killing her kids with filicide because of it. It's extremely rare. It's extremely unusual, which means this stuff is hiding and people are unaware. And so here's, you know, some messaging for everyone out there. As I know, if anyone has been to a doctor, worked with a hospital system, has any kind of more than I've had a cold or a flu that I've had to go take care of, you've seen these crap shows in the healthcare system. You're not alone. It's no. not unique to your town. This is just one more example that went to the disaster zone that it did. But this is out there because these organizations are for profit, and they're going to maximize all they can to balance that dichotomy between profit and patient care. And when it starts getting skewed in the wrong directions towards profit, this is the kind of shit that happens.
And it's funny because we're not even really seeing a lot of arguing on this case about like denial of care or anything like that. I'm surprised because that's usually
evident.
That's usually what comes into place where it's like, well, insurance isn't going to cover this or that, so you're stuck with this. This is just, well, here's what you were approved for. This is what, so that's not even part of the equation in this one, at least not on that's being brought to light on the surface here. I do wonder if there was any of that going on behind the scenes, but this is just, this is the system working as designed. And
yeah.
That there really isn't anything in this case where I look at it and go, well, they really didn't do their job there. No, they did their job to which the medical community and to which our laws require them to do it. They did check that box.
And one more thing on it too. I also, the other thing that struck me with listening to Dr. Tufts on this, it also struck me, part of it is, are we this hard up as a nation that people don't want to be doctors, that this is your senior
yes.
person that you're putting on important cases? Is that
1,000%.
Yeah. She's got a month experience and you're giving her a patient like this without
yep.
supervision, without mentors, not because they didn't think she was willing or willing and open to it. She seemed willing and open to whatever people told her to do because she just did what people told her to do. But there's no one there. So no one's going to psychiatry up in Massachusetts. Maybe
we don't have enough. There's not enough providers. So then you'd end up getting, and I'm not saying she was doing this, but this is where you get kind of the cattle call type atmosphere where it ends up being, you know, okay, 17 minutes in and out the door, who's next? And, you know, I'm sure there's plenty of providers that are doing that, you know, with the best they can do and with the utmost of positive intentions, but there's only so much you can do when you are limited and when there's far more people that you need to help than there are of you to help them. Everything gets scaled back and it is what it is. Then the company starts saying, oh gosh, well, if we can, you know, shuttle this many people through here and it seems to be working just fine, and there's a couple that go off the rails, well, we can write that off, the profit over it, and that's what you end up having have happen. I'm not saying this would happen in this case, but again, this is just indicative of our medical system. This is how this shit works, kids. I mean, and like I said, do I think the medical system really did a whole lot wrong here in this case? According to their rules and how they do it, no, I don't. Do I think Lindsay was morally failed, ethically failed by the providers not really following, you know, the creed of first do no harm and truly care for your patients the way that they should be? Yeah, I think she was failed there. And I don't think it was like a personal failing of intent. It's just, this is how it works. And this is the baseline of what we're dealing with. And it's really sad.
And I want to highlight a little bit too on this. I might misspeak, so I'm going to caveat that with I might be a little off there, because here's my impression of what came into listening to Julie Paul, the midwife nurse practitioner, psychiatric nurse practitioner, the one that went right after Tufts, the one with a lot of experience. So as I understood it from her, as I'm paraphrasing this back, she became very passionate about women's health. My daughter's a labor and delivery nurse because of her passion for women's health. And so she kept ramping up all these different things she wanted to get better at for women's health. As I understand it, she formed her own company, formed her own group, her own, and that, so she created something out of her passion for that 90-minute intake that obviously wasn't being done in the standardized corporate world that that Tufts was in. So she formed her own thing. So you can really see the difference. And then what happens is, because this is going on in my own town, these smaller groups that are formed with these great humanitarian individuals that are there for the health, well-being of others get sucked up by these larger corporations and then snuffed out. So that beautiful individuality that she brought to her clients, having her cell phone, making phone calls on weekends, mm-hmm. checking in, 90-minute intakes, get snuffed out by the corporations that are there to make the big money.
It's true. I got one more comment, then I want to go to Murdaugh.
But
if Lindsay didn't tell the truth about Lindsay's past, how's the doctor supposed to know? They're not. This is how the two things in parallel can work together. Number one, charts should be able to be communicated from doctor to doctor. So that's it. And Tufts, I believe, is the one who said, well, Lindsay was so accurate in what she was telling me. I thought she just had it all going on, basically. Like, it's not this patient's responsibility to recite their medication list to you. That should be already charted professionally, because it may not be accurate from the person suffering from psychosis. But the thought here of how are they supposed to know? If on the things that are not communicated, they're not. But here's the deal. We also have to accept that a person that can be in psychosis is not going to be delivering that information accurately. And we as a society also have to accept that that person might not be responsible then for the horrific things that they do when they're in a state of active psychosis. Because it's not gobbledygook, it's not witchcraft. These sort of things happen. And it's not that they're trying to hide something or be deceptive. Their brain is not working right. And it's rare, and that's why we can't just dole out reason of insanity, please, to everybody, but we need to look at every case individually and examine whether that happens, because it does sometimes, and this is one where it did.
Anyway, so
let's go to Alec Murdaugh.
Hold on. One more. Tony, because it's a direct response to this. How are they supposed to know if Lindsay doesn't tell? This is where reps comes in.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. When you do an interview, and this is why Reddington brought up, if you're only doing telehealth and you can't see the entire body to see the reactions that she's having full body when she's giving her answers, someone with a lot of experience, years and years of reps, is going to be able to pick up on wobbles that we need to explore more here, because it's going to be tells that she gives off. Again, if she's witting of it, but if she doesn't know because of the psychosis, another thing. But again, reps pays in. Anyway, go ahead.
In the case of Tufts, it's just time.
She doesn't have
the years yet. And that's something that only time can give her. Yeah. Telehealth and time. And unfortunately, that's where a lot of things are going. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Love for you to weigh in and give us your thoughts over there.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now. And don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.